welcome everyone to the very first Swing Thoughts of 2025. I'm golf spiritual leader for no other reason than I called dibs on it. I said, dibs on golf spiritual leader. And as soon as I called myself that, a lot of other people were like, why didn't I call myself golf spiritual leader? And I was like,
they didn't think of it.
I'm along with Coach Tim, who is quite an accomplished writer, an accomplished raconteur, and a coach, both of young men and women at the university level, and now teaching anyone and everyone Monday through Sunday. I don't know. When do you teach?
Wait a sec. There's certain days I take off.
Tim never takes a minute off. When do you teach? Monday through weekends or whatever?
Oh, Tuesday, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturday mornings, some Sundays.
There you go. That's almost every day of the week. Tim O'Connor, O'ConnorGolf.ca. That's how you line up a lesson. We're going to talk a little bit about what Tim's doing for the golfer in your life that wants to work on their game during the winter months. How are you, sir? How are you?
I'm really good. I'm in that space where I actually love winter. I know golfers are supposed to pine for spring and whatnot, but I took Freddie for a lovely walk today, and it was just snow falling, and I love the fresh fallen snow and walking in the park with him and as he romps around.
By the way, for you people who listen to both of our shows, sorry, Tim, I need to make this point. For the people that listen to both of our shows, to be clear, Tim didn't take Fred Patterson for a walk. A lot of times that gets mixed up, because sometimes I take Freddie for a walk after, because I think it's time he gets out there. But your dog's name is Fred.
There you go. Yeah. Freddie the boxer, resplendent in his blue coat. Because he's a boxer and he doesn't have long hair.
No,
so
in the winter,
he needs a coat, and it's minus 13. So there you go.
Well, Stan doesn't have really a coat. Well.
Thank you.
I take Stan out there. He's not interested when it's minus 5 or 6 or worse. He just is like, I'm okay, Pop. But
yeah, I'm okay on this couch.
I'm okay here. It's fine. When it's, you were saying, yeah, I mean, winter's fine. I've enjoyed being here. I can't wait to get out of here, though. I have continued from our last show my hiatus in golf. I mean, other than I was in the sun for a few days over the Christmas break and I hit golf balls once, I haven't made even in my golf lab, it's been all working out and doing yoga. I still, weirdly enough, kind of in my mind are thinking about things I want to do with my swing, but this is the longest I've gone in a long time without sort of obsessing over my golf swing. Still look at the golf game, but not my swing. How about you?
I'm giving lessons at the golf house in Guelph, and so when there's time before or after, yeah, I'll pick up a club and I'll hit, and I'll be hitting shots and having fun, and I'll find that sometimes the intention was maybe to hit 5 or 10 wedges, and a half hour later, still there.
That's right.
Oh, God.
I'll just hit a couple wedges.
Swing path a little bit too far out to the right there. Oh, I can see that it's a little too close to the heel for comfort there.
I want to hit a couple wedges before I go home. Hey, Sandy, it's Tim. I can't talk right now. My hands are bleeding.
Yeah, exactly. So that is the nature of this game.
Well, we wish all our listeners of the Swing Thought devotees, we really, really appreciate the few of you that do listen to us and have listened to us for now our 10th year, our unofficial beginning of the 10th, because our official kickoff is the first week of April, where hopefully we'll have a sponsor by then. We are looking for one. In the meantime, we couldn't recommend our friends at TaylorMade enough. They got some new stuff coming up. And our friends at Oscar Bravo. But I had a coffee a couple weeks ago in Mexico with my buddy Gavin, who is the guy in charge of secretlinks.golf. And they are starting to get some response. And this spring, I'd like to have him back on, because I think It is a unique experience for Canadians who might, you know, go to Vegas on a golf trip, or certainly Florida. Once in a while, we head over to Phoenix or Palm Springs. But this thing going on in Mexico where I go, the golf is so good and the experience is so different. So we'll have him back on to talk about how maybe some golfers listening are like, you know, I want to have a golf experience, but I also want to bring my partner and I want to experience the location as opposed to just, you know, get a rental car at the airport, go golfing five or six times, don't really see any of the culture, and then get back on the airplane and go, which is fine, but that's not what this is all about.
That's cool. And I relate big time. I've been on a number of trips. I remember one in Ireland in particular. Like you said, it was a golf junket, so a bunch of media people went. And it was really weird that they didn't really showcase us to Ireland. The only part they showcased was the golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, part of, to me, the beauty of traveling to play golf is experiencing the culture, the people, obviously the cuisine. You know, we sampled a lot of the beer. but you don't experience another country. That's like saying you go to O'Hare Airport and went, yeah, I've been to Chicago.
No, exactly. I mean, it's different. When you go to Myrtle Beach or you go to one of these sort of golf destinations, I mean, yeah, the local culture is a bunch of churches and Hooters. And, you know, what's that that restaurant that everyone likes that has everything in it? Doesn't matter.
Oh, the Mandarin or something?
No, but it's like, it's a famous chain that's all on the highways down there, and you stop in and it's got a little...
Cracker Barrel?
Cracker Barrel. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Look at us playing old guy charades. look at us playing old guy charades.
Well, old guys have made the trip to Florida in Myrtle Beach in the car a few times.
Yeah. I just want to, before, so anyways, we're going to talk to him. And just before we leave the golf guy trip, my last golf trip where I drank was Myrtle Beach in 2015 with a bunch of guys. This is the biggest one I've been on. It was like 40, 50 guys. Now, I've been on other ones with Club Link where I hosted it, but this was different. These were all just a bunch of us put it together. And that picture, somebody took the picture of me passed out on a bed.
Oh, the famous picture of you with Spread Eagle on
Spread
your
Eagle,
bed.
just blackout drunk. And I remember that golf trip very well, parts of it. Like, that was the kind of trip where guys were drinking vodka and orange juice at like 8:30 in the morning. You know, like, you're drinking beer all the way. I mean, it's America, so you can drink beer on the golf course. Big buckets of beer. And then we would have lunch, and I might play nine holes in the afternoon, have a nap so I could recover, then get drunk again. And so I just passed 9 years, and so many of our Swing Thoughts friends reached out to me when they see the picture, and they sort of congratulate me on 9 years of being, you know, drunk, drink free. But a couple of them asked if that picture was staged. Like, did I sort of say, hey, take a picture. Take a picture of me in this really embarrassing pose.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll just assure you that it was not staged. I literally was. Someone walked by the room and they could sort of see that I was, you know, passed out in all my clothes.
Well, that's it's amazing. Anyone who's dealt with addiction knows that it's one of the hardest things you'll ever deal with in your life. So to people like yourself, sir, I just so admire what you've been able to do. I mean, it's just an amazing feat, actually. So, and that may sound like an overstatement, but I know I can't imagine what it's like to deal with something like that. So it's amazing.
I was
very
lucky.
Model and mentor, man.
Thank you very much. And I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I was very lucky. It was never, I know a lot of people in the program that have struggled way more than I did. It was just more of the whatever goes on in my brain that I decided one day that would be enough for me. And it was. All right. So we're just doing a few shows in the wintertime. Tim's going away. You're going to be in Costa Rica.
Yeah. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 15th, and I'm going away Monday for a week. I'm not taking my clubs, so I'm just so past, schlepping the golf bag on the wheels and everything through an airport and hoping they arrive safe and sound and then coming back and all that. So, no, I get lots of golf at the golf house, so... And it's kind of expensive, so, you know.
Yeah, it's expensive for sure. Fred's going to Costa Rica for a month. He won't be taking his clubs. Nice. This year, we're not going to broadcast. When we go away, the last couple of years, we continued to do the show when I was in Mexico and he was in the Dominican. But this year, we're going to take a couple weeks off. While he's away, I'm taking a couple weeks going to Spain. And then I'm going to take another couple weeks later in the spring and go back to Mexico.
Nice. Are you going to do some like best of Humble and Fred type of stuff?
For a couple weeks we are. And then when he's not available, I'm going to do the show with some of the... We have a group of people that are sort of regular contributors to our program, ex-broadcasters that we're friends of. Yeah. Some people listening might know the names Jeff Lumby, Maureen Holloway, Larry Fedoric. Yeah. Even Tony Clement might sit in once. But so that's what I do, and like we call them guest Freds. So we'll do that. We'll have some guest Freds while he's away. So where I wanted to go with this, and I know we've kind of talked a little bit about me learning language or trying to learn Spanish and how it kind of relates to learning anything, especially golf. So I had a chance to talk to a friend of my older brother's. This guy's name is Sebastian, and he's... Listen, you know, you and I have a sort of regular level of intelligence. You know, your ability to disseminate information through the written word. I have a bit of a facility with the spoken word. And so to an average person, we seem like we might be on the brighter end, even though we're really not. We're just a couple of... Because here's how I know that we're not that bright. We're okay bright. But when I'm around my brother, who's super smart... This guy's even smarter than my brother. So I just had, like, I sat there for an hour and a half trying to keep up with the conversation, you know, and he's very kind. But the reason I sought him out is, just like a golfer, he speaks five languages.
Far out.
Like, I know they're called polyglots. That's what somebody who speaks multiple languages is called, a polyglot. Now, wow. I think, I'm not sure if he's officially one. Like, I think you have to speak, like, more than five, but he speaks...
There's a criteria?
There's a criteria.
Polyglot?
Well, yeah. You can't just speak English and pig Latin. You know what I mean? So he speaks, forget English.
What about Yiddish? What about Yiddish?
Yiddish? Yeah. Listen, if you spoke Hebrew, that would count. If my older brother speaks French, Spanish, Hebrew, he spent quite a bit of time in Israel. So he's got a good facility with Hebrew. Anyway, the reason I sought him out is that I wanted to know from him, like, I wanted this sort of, the give me the steps. What do I do? Because I'm spending
Buddha,
an hour.
Enlighten me.
Exactly.
Enlighten me.
I'm spending an hour to an hour
Don't
and a half
away.
Every day doing this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I make some breakthroughs, but I just thought, oh, I'll talk to this guy and see how he did it. He speaks French fluently. He speaks German fluently. He speaks Chinese fluently and Japanese fluently. And he's just added Turkish recently. When I say fluently, I'm not talking about where's the bathroom. This guy's a professor. He taught in Germany and wrote dissertations in German. Same in Taiwan. He speaks Chinese well enough to have, you know, lectured and written books and whatever people do when they're smart, you know, they do things. So I'm gonna boil it all down to what he said. And why am I talking about it on a golf podcast? Because we were talking about the techniques he's used and the time that he puts in and all the different tips I picked up. But you know what the number one was? You'll love this. Was to give yourself grace.
Love it.
Was to give yourself a break, Howard, is what he said. like I was telling him all these things I was doing and how frustrated I was getting. And then he asked me a couple questions. He goes, well, you have to ask yourself, kind of like when Tim talks to a new student, says, why are you playing golf? What do you want out of this game? So he asked me that. He said, why are you doing this? There's not a test at the end of this for you, is there? There's not. He said, isn't the reason you're doing this is because it's fun? And I was like,
shock.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, yeah.
He said, you need to keep that in mind. And I got to tell you, so that was Saturday. And ever since then, I've been just struck by the simplicity of that and how I've applied that in other parts of my obsessive mind. Let me just finish by saying, I've been doing yoga for 20 years. 10 years ago, I decided I wasn't going to be scratch at yoga. And so all my experiences with yoga are all pretty pleasant. I can have a class where my balance is good. That's great. I have a class where my balance isn't good. Don't care. I'm not walking by mirrors going into downward dog to see if my pose is correct. So the takeaway from that meeting was, he said, you got to remember why you're doing it. And I'm assuming you're doing it for fun. And then you have to give yourself grace. You have to allow yourself to be uncomfortable in this. And I was like, all these lights went on. The idea, we've talked about it on this show, being comfortable with being uncomfortable is one of the biggest barriers that golfers face when it comes to performing the game. Anyway, that's what I've been thinking about the last couple of days.
That's so cool. That is amazing stuff. And so my immediate reaction is like, particularly to how I know you going into, you know, I'm into my second decade of knowing you. And
does it seem longer? Yeah. Some days it seems longer. No, I'm kidding. You've been lovely with me.
No, but you are, you know, I've said it a number of times that you're intense. Anything you want to do, you're like all in. You know, what did you learn? The unicycle in what, 6 weeks or so?
Yes.
Something like that.
It's one of my skills.
Probably. Yeah, set a record for a middle-aged man to learn how to ride a unicycle. But the mental and emotional investment and the identification, now moving to sort of more of the universal, you know, the we and me included, is that, you know, we get so wrapped up in it and we got to nail this and got to hit the standard and got to score well or whatever it is. And that just sets us up for, in essence, for failure, for not learning, because we're not meeting the standard. So what happens? We judge ourselves as incompetent. Oh, not good enough. Not trying hard enough, blah, blah, all the noise. And grace is a wonderful word. I love that word. And yeah, that's just sort of like, just let all this shite go. Let it go. And to know that, you know, whether you absolutely nail this language, or Spanish, or whatever you're trying to do, doesn't mean you're not a good person.
Exactly.
You're not okay.
Yep.
You're fine. You're absolutely fine. And just, I'll wrap this up by saying that, and when you operate from that place of grace, that's actually when the good things happen.
And you know, I'm not punching the inside of my, you know, car when I get a verb conjugation wrong, but it's
good thing.
But you know, there's definitely I carry more whatever with me than is necessary. Again, using it as this idea of, you know, somebody is working on their game this winter and you've got January, February, March, and April. And a coach of mine once said, listen, man, if you haven't figured out something by the time the snow melts and you're playing outside in April, it's kind of like, it's not like you can't, but that's when your game, if you're a tournament player like I am, you want to, you have to have it set by then. But I have no, I'm going to Spain, I'm going back to Mexico. Like, the Mexicans aren't going to be mad at me if I don't speak completely perfect Spanish to them.
You mean there's not a guy with his arms crossed Yeah. Going, oh, senor.
Senor, you used that. That's you used a star, not Sarah. Come on, Howard. You're better than that. So it's all self-imposed, yeah, which is what golfers do.
And bass players.
Bass players. Anyone trying to perform.
Yep.
And it, you know, again, it was a great reminder of this guy who I really, who's like scratch or better at all these languages. Exactly. His advice to me was just relax, dude. You know, when, another thing he said to me, because I was talking about where I am in my progress, and I said something about, you know, I sort of gave myself a grade as to where I am. And he said, I'll bet you're better than you say you are. I said, well, yeah. I don't know. He said, no, I can tell by the conversation we're having that you probably am not, I don't give myself enough credit, which is, you know, again, back to golf. We don't give ourselves enough self-care or love to acknowledge that, yeah, this work you've been doing around the green for the last few weeks, it is going to pay off, but you have to enjoy it. How many times have I said on this show that I love practicing because I love it? Mm-hmm. Whether I get better that day or not is almost, unless I'm trying to fix something, I just love doing it. So I'm going to try and bring that attitude to, like, I have a class today, and, you know, just bring that spirit of, like, I don't need to get it all right today. I can just get a little bit right today. That's all I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great stuff. And I love how you talked about how you just love to practice. And you hear a lot of people talk about working on their game. You're not working on your game. You're loving the game.
Mm-hmm.
And but you do know intellectually that when you put time into something, you're probably going to get better at it. You know, it just sort of stands to reason. But ultimately, the reason you're doing it is not to get this result. It's that you love doing it.
Yeah.
And I do like, excuse me, that word grace. I mean, one of the chapters in my book is, I forget, it refers to grace. I'm not going to go, it's a gift of grace or something like that. Yes, a gift of grace. And it was about how I had a freak out at my Club C a few years ago. And I saw Tim Kazarin, this guy who nearly died, you know, from a freaking building falling on him. And his, you know, he recovered from catastrophic, you know, injuries. And I see this guy, I go, like, really, Tim? You're all mad at yourself because you four putted a green. Mm. So I got from that a gift of grace, it's hard to nail down what grace is really, and so it kind of, to me, it kind of speaks to almost like a spiritual part of ourselves which we don't even know. We don't even know what's there. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of this mystery. What do you mean grace? What is that? Can you prove that scientifically, that you got grace? No, it's like this almost mysterious part of us that we don't even know. But that's where we draw on being our best.
Well,
and performing and all those things.
I think an easy way to explain it is, you know, something I've been told my whole life is, you're too hard on yourself. I'm like, I know, I can't help it. I can't help it. I know I am. Stop making fun of me. I will tell you one last story about language and how it relates to golf. So I have a tutor two times, sometimes three times a week, which is just one-on-one classes. So it's like going to your golf coach. And I may have used this example before, but I've got another sort of as an adjunct to a story I may have told last time. So I work with somebody one-on-one, and in those classes, it's mostly Spanish. Like, they, of course, that coach knows my level of Spanish and speaks just a little bit beyond that for me. And if he sees me or she sees me kind of looking like I am now, like stunned, she'll back up, tell me the word in Spanish, print it, like she'll come up on the screen. And then if I really don't know, she'll tell me. So I do pretty well. Me and the coach, you know, I've had some times where I'm like, I sort of snuck into the 90s, like I felt like I shot 98, 97, feeling pretty good about my game. I've been talking back and forth for 35 or 40 minutes. And then a couple hours later, I went into a group class and just shit the bed.
Totally. I totally get it.
It's like I went from the range where my coach was there. All the conditions were, you know, very benign. And all of a sudden, there's four or five other people.
Yeah, you're on the first team.
I'm on the first team.
And all these people are looking at you.
And I'm literally speaking Spanish like we did when we were watching, you know, cartoons as a kid. Hola. I mean, I'm not doing, I can't think of anything. My brain goes.
Ay, caramba.
Exactly. Ay, caramba. Adios, amigos. Like, I made myself laugh. I'm like, dude, relax. Because like 2 hours before, I thought I was, you know, I was going to state that I was bilingual. So here's what happened. Here's the story I'm getting to. So in these classes I go to, there's a bunch of people like me. A lot of guys our age, some women and men our age, generally. People that are sort of later in life trying to learn something new. And then they have a moderator. And this particular one I went into, she's very, very good. She's from Mexico. And after the class, a couple days later, I got a note from my coach. Because in the system I'm in, you also have a coach, somebody that monitors your progress. He said, hey, I want to talk to you. And what happened was the woman who was moderating my class told my coach, she said, hey, just want you to know what how Howard did with this group lesson we were in. And her assessment was this. She said, Howard's very good. Howard understands about 70% of what's being said. But the problem with Howard is he gets lost in the conversation because he's trying to be too perfect.
There you go.
And I thought, isn't that interesting? I was because what she means is the conversation's going and I'm on my phone trying to fucking look up the word they said three sentences ago. Meanwhile, I understood.
So you're not present.
I'm not,
so
not only not present, but I understood most of what they said. These aren't complicated. We're not talking about, you know, nuclear fusion here. We're talking about, did you go to the grocery store? You know, what's the word for avocado? They're not
or
really
clementines.
Exactly. One of my favorite words in Spanish is the word for orange. Naranja. It's like a lot of stuff going on for the word orange.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But she said he's very good, but he's trying to be too perfect.
Wow.
And I thought, wouldn't that be of interest to anyone who knows me?
Yeah, well, that's what I say to people. Like, it's, you know, like, how's that like your life? You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, and I totally relate. Totally relate. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are kind of like, whoa, yeah. Yep. That's kind of what happens. You've just so hit that nail on the head.
I think a lot of our golf, and mine included, yours as well. But I would say for me, someone that's always striving and striving and trying to get better,
totally. It
made me think, like, just like that woman said, he gets about 70% of what's going on, sometimes more. Like, all the conversation in this group, they're all people at my level, a little bit above, maybe a little bit below. But it's not like I'm not following most of the conversation, but I'm not present at times because I'm trying to do, rather than just blurt out something. Maybe you're going to make a fool of yourself. Maybe you won't come up with the right word. But rather than do that, I tend to hang back until I get it just right. And I do that with my golf. And I think a lot of us do that. And that's why I brought it up today as the year begins. It made me think, like, maybe I don't need to grind all the time. Because I've already got about 70 or 80% of a guy's game. You know what I mean?
Totally.
I get 70 or 80%. The parts that break down for me in the other 25% or so is when I'm trying to be too perfect. I end up hitting shots that are horrid.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of just, yeah, slightly offline, yeah, they're way into the woods.
Right.
And in those times in which you're just kind of letting it happen, allowing it, that's actually when you tend to do pretty well and surprise yourself. I mean, I talk about that in this book we've talked about a few times.
I'm sorry, you have a book? What I've heard about the sticky? The getting
seven ways to change your snow tires?
Seven ways to get less sticky. Seven sins of the father.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we'll go right there. So when I played golf with my dad, I was a golf writer and thought I was a hot shit golfer and everything. And he'd invite me to this private club with his buddies on Saturday mornings. And I'd just, you know, as you say, shit the bed.
Yeah.
I'd be so tense. And then my dad in the back nine would go, let's see your don't give a shit swing. And pow.
Yeah.
I'd just nail it. You know, and it's just, oh, But it's the same thing with, so I blurted out there being a bass player. So I work with a coach, Jason Razzo. He's amazing. And so he said there's about four bass lines that would be really good for me to learn. And one is called Long Distance Runaround by Yes. And anyone who recalls them, Chris Squire, amazing bass player. So I'm kind of nimble enough to get the get my fingers on the fretboard to play, right? But it's the timing, and there's these meter changes. So I'm, you know, dutifully counting 1, 2, 3, 4 all the way through it. But there's these sections where the timing gets a bit weird, as happens in progressive rock, and it's just that thing of trying hard versus allowing it to happen. And when I relax and allow it, then I can. I'm so much closer to nailing the time than when I'm trying hard. And it's just really, to me, language, golf, music, business, so many aspects of, if we can just, you know, give ourselves some slack, allow ourselves some grace, if you will, I love that, then we can give ourselves a chance to perform pretty well. And, you know, but when we're trying so hard, that's when you hit it, you know, out of bounds.
Well, and that, I mean, it's when, because it's such a physical interpretation of the mental chaos that's going on while you're over the ball.
Yes.
Now, that's what it is. It's a manifestation of the opposite of all we're talking about. You're not playing with a sense of joy and life and love and just in the moment, and wherever this ball goes is cool. And, you know, we've all felt like that at times, but it's the, you know, and again, whenever I see somebody, you know, wringing out the grip or while they're standing over a shot, we've all done this. We've all seen somebody who we know is about to hit a shitty shot because they've stood there too long. You know, good players will do that and then back off.
Right.
Like the better players I play with, myself included, when I sense that I'm not ready to do that, I'll step away. And we've given this advice many times on the program that would save the average player a lot of strokes. If you could just one or two times around when you feel uncomfortable to have the maturity or the whatever it is, the presence awareness. To be awareness. Present, awareness, to walk away, it'll make a big difference.
Absolutely. To me, when you're having that, to me, what I've said this number of times is that when you feel uncomfortable, that's your body sending you a message, abort mission.
Yeah.
And stepping back, but for a lot of people that's hard to do. But could we use this as a transition into talking about the golf lesson stuff? That
absolutely we can.
Okay, so
let me just finish by saying thank you for your patience. Muchas gracias, mi buen amigos. Feliz año nuevo por muchas personas como escuchar un podcast. There you go.
I threw some
Spanish at you.
What I love about Spanish is, and it's one of those lyrical languages to me. Like German's very nice too, but it has a lot of consonants. It just seems that Spanish just flows like a lovely river or something.
Yeah, some German's, you know, it's a little bit harsh. It's a bit aggressive, you know. Yeah, there's not a lot of romantic movies where the protagonist is like, you know, doing a lot of that. Let's talk about, now that we've talked about, you know, how lessons can help you, let's talk to somebody whose lessons are being given to help you. Timothy?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just, now that we're into January, a lot of people are coming to me for golf lessons, and it's really fun. I've got, you know, a few low handicappers, a lot of mid-levels, but a lot of novices, and had coaching a couple, and last Saturday, we're moving along, and we're about two-thirds of the way through, and the woman says to me, she says, I just have so many things going through my head as I stand over the ball. You know, am I standing right? Am I going to take the club back the right way? Is my hands in the right? And it's like, whoa. And So many people can relate to that. They just have all this stuff going on in their head. It's kind of like you were talking a few minutes ago about looking up a word in a conversation, and so you're not present. You're not even really, you're not even there. Mm-hmm. You're in some sort of mental space, you know, out in fantasy land, but you ain't playing golf.
Nope.
Because you're not connected to the club or the target or what's really happening. And this is just such a common thing for people. So she said, well, how do I stop it? And I said, well, I said, one of the things that we can do is, it sounds very elemental almost, is like, let's make golf a physical game. So instead of being so in our heads, can we perhaps be feeling the club in our hand, feeling the end of the club, just having a sense of what's going on, being connected to something physical. And so I just find that really helps people a lot. And the where I go with that is I just show them a good place to start is that Pia Nielsen, Lynn Marriott process of Think Box, Play Box.
Mm-hmm.
Do you kind of do something similar?
It's been a long time since I've read that book, but I know that yes, the answer is yes. I basically do everything I need to do behind the ball, and then when I step in, I try and get to it as quickly as I can. And if I find myself ruminating over what decision I've made, if I'm not comfortable with it, that's when I will step away. But once I'm comfortable with it, and this is the shot I'm going to hit, I try and get to it. Mainly for that reason. So I don't want to sit there dwelling over is this the right thing to do? Or has the wind just come up again? Or does the lie feel like I thought it was going to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so the Think Box, Play Box way of it is, it's almost imagining there's like a dividing line on the ground. You could imagine a golf club, a piece of rope or something. And when you're in the Think Box, that's where it's like, yeah, you're thinking about what's going on here. What do you got? You know, I got 140 yards. I got some wind right to left. I got water there, back pin. And that's where you go, for someone that might be a stock 8-iron or whatever. And I'm going to aim at the right side of the green and maybe hit a draw. Maybe, and so it'll stay away from that water. And maybe it'll end up in the middle of the green. But once you step over that imaginary line, it's all physical. It's like being in your body, just get in, you know, whatever. Everyone's process is different. But it could be just lining up the club face or intermediate target. Getting in your posture, feeling your quads, your glutes, whatever, feeling the club, and then go. And that, when you do that, when you get more in your body, that in essence presses pause on the thoughts. Mm. So that woman found, I just find that's a very simple way to help people to start dealing with pressing pause on the thoughts.
Well, and it kind of ties into what I said earlier in the show about when I see somebody and they start squeezing the club, the longer they're standing there, and you know what they're doing. I mean, we've joked about it. They're going through the Rolodex of things that they think they need in order to, the checklist, in order to move the golf ball. You know, Marty, our friend Marty Chuck, has a device. I'm not sure. I've seen it on his Instagram, but I haven't seen it for a while, but it's basically a mechanism, machine actually, that sits next to you on the range, and balls come out every few seconds.
Oh, wow.
And the ball just comes out, and you just hit it. The ball comes out, you hit it. Here it comes again, you hit it. I mean, you can do that on the range yourself. You set up 10 balls and just go one after the other after the other, but this thing, this machine he has, I've seen people on it, and it's just that. It's there. It's what you said about golf being a physical activity. The motion itself is very athletic, if you let it be that way.
Yeah. If you allow it.
Now, like I say, like I haven't hit a real golf ball in now 2.5 months. Tomorrow and Friday, I'm going with one of our friend Kent. We're going to get together and guru it out a bit and then hit some balls. And same tomorrow. I'm with some other friends of mine. The reason I'm doing it is recognizing that 16 or 17 days from now, I'm going to play golf again. But I'm not trying to work on my swing so much as I'm trying to get my body to feel like sort of golf muscles, awakening them a little bit. But because of our conversation and the conversation I had with my language guru, my approach is going to be more from a physical nature. I'm not going to tape a lot of my swings. I'm just going to see, given what I know how to do, how will golf show up for me if I'm not really working on my game? I'm just out here to enjoy playing with some friends and then in Spain, playing with some people in Spanish and see what that experience is like versus taping my swing, sending it to you going, I don't know, I seem a little shut, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, in essence, I think what you're talking about is being in the present and like really being in your experience and enjoying it, you know, instead of, you know, usually we've talked about this innumerable times over the history of this podcast is what we think we're either in the future, you know, usually worrying about something, angsting, or in the past, regret, rumination. And, you know, that's the mind. That's the way the mind works. But when we're present, we're more like right now. And the thing I just came up with this years ago is that the body doesn't time travel. The body's always in the present moment. So when we're feeling something with our sensations, hearing something, seeing something, feeling it with our hands or something, we're just there witnessing that. We're in the present moment.
Yeah, I just want to wrap this part up by saying I think that really is not just for better golfers, but for a lot of golfers, maybe most listening. The idea that if they don't do a series of things right, then the thing they're trying to produce, the golf shot, well, somehow they need to, there needs to be all this self-flagellation and all this self, whatever, my brother will have a better name, a word for it, but all this machinations about I've got to do these steps in this particular order, because back to the idea of even getting somebody to throw a ball at your feet and then you hit it while it's rolling, you could just it. You would react to it and make great contact.
Yep.
So what I would say,
it's like a one-timer in hockey,
exactly. the final thing I'll say, and then we can move on to the golf from last night. I think we can all give ourselves some more grace and also recognize that, you know, after all the years we've been playing, chances are, if I didn't take another lesson, I'd probably be okay. You know, not that I'm saying you don't need lessons, and you certainly can have a great time with this coach of ours, Coach Tim O'Connor. But you have a lot within you already, and a good coach can help you find that and maybe eliminate some of the, you know, the buzzing around in your head.
Absolutely. And but why don't we, here's another Fred Shoemaker thing. You reminded me about rolling the ball. So that's the thing I learned from Fred Shoemaker is rolling a ball to a student, let them hit. But you have to make sure you stay out of the way in case they toe it and shank it. But anyways, Fred, so when we're practicing to, in essence, what he says most of the time, we're practicing to do something, to stop slicing it, to stop the dead left shot. What we're practicing is fear. We're practicing fear and doubt, and we get pretty good at that. It's like people who complain, they're really good at complaining.
Yep, absolutely.
But why don't we practice trusting ourselves and allowing? And that's when more good things happen. That's when we discover what we're capable of. I just thought that to me, that was just that's why Fred is, you know, amazing. That kind of thing. So rather than practicing fear and doubt, let's practice trusting ourselves and allowing. Wow. To me, there's so much more good stuff that could come out of that.
Well, and the pushback.
I just have to do it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The pushback always is, but I have to hit this shot over water. So therefore, I need to check my grip, check my alignment,
and use my water ball.
And here's my water ball. I love that. The last thing today on the show, kids, it started a couple weeks ago, and out of curiosity, I checked it out. It's the Golf League, TGL. Most people know it's a big simulator, a giant screen, Graphics are crazy. They have a rotating green. They all chip and putt on. And I watched it again last night because the Tiger was playing his team. I just don't know if it's for me. I mean, in these dog days of winter, can you have dog days of winter? Whatever these are.
You can call it whatever you want.
But,
man,
you know, these days of winter where it's like, you know, you wonder if you'll ever see the sun again. It's a pleasant diversion. But I think my bigger point, and I watched about an hour and a half of it last night, and the golf was kind of quirky, and seeing them hit shots into a giant, like, I'm not a big simulator golf guy anyway, but it is kind of cool seeing the best players on the planet play sim golf at a high level, obviously, from their competence and the graphics and the screen, and, you know, the crowds are a bit contrived, whatever. But my bigger point is, you're 66 or 7. What are you?
Seven.
Hal, man, golf spiritual leader, just a few days away from being grandpa spiritual leader to being, you know, I'm going to be 65.
Oh, you don't have to officially retire from Humble and Fred?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's what Fred said. Yeah, once you get to 65. But I thought maybe the part of the conversation you and I could have is, you know, not everything's for us anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? I was watching it last night, and when you have a chance to check it out, and maybe some people listening have, like, yeah, it was cool, and it was amusing, and such, but it wasn't really what I think of as golf. But I'm 65, you're 67. It's not what we think of as golf, so what? What they're trying to do is get, you know, people your son's age, my daughter's age, people who don't want to wait around for, you know, excitement to happen. They want it. So that's, it's kind of like the way the game is built. There's excitement on every hole. Now, it's kind of contrived and they're playing indoors, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what you think when you see it.
Yeah, no, I eventually will watch it, but I remember, you know, it came up. I get this Golf Digest feed every day, and oh, there it's happening tonight. And then the next day I read, oh, I didn't happen to watch it. It's just not on my radar. It's just not something that is part of my consciousness. It's like, you know, if you played a bunch of songs and threw a Taylor Swift song in there, I wouldn't recognize it.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's not on my radar. It's not in the, you know, in the silo of how I, you know, take in information as a 67-year-old person. Maybe it is interesting, but the only thing I saw of it on my TV was kind of this cartoony commercial. I forget when it ran, but it was long. It was Ricky Fowler, voiceover, some kind of character dressed in orange, of course, and all these kind of cool graphics and things, and it was explaining how it works. I thought that could be cool, but at the end of the day, I didn't watch it. Part of me went, oh, I do a podcast on golf and I write about golf. I should probably watch this. But I didn't.
Well, that's, I mean,
I don't feel like my life is any worse for having not experienced it.
Well, give yourself some grace, because I guarantee you, of the few people that listen to this show, a very small percentage would have bothered.
Mm-hmm.
Two quick things quickly before we shut down. One is, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll start with the great, which is Nick Taylor.
Yep.
And we'll finish with an encounter I had with a writer for Golf Digest.
Oh, cool.
Well, not
cool.
A big encounter, just interesting that something I wrote that he liked on Twitter. And I'll tell you what I wrote after we talk about the excitement at the end of the PGA Tour event this past weekend.
Yeah. Well, you and I have both talked that. Well, especially me, is I don't watch a lot of regular PGA Tour events. I'm just not that interested. Majors, players, you know, those Tier 2 events like Memorial. Yeah, I'm watching it. But so I'm watching the Packers-Eagles game. My brother goes, hey, Nick Taylor's two back or something like that. I went, oh, there's golf on. Oh, yes. So I check it out, and he seems way down the list, the line at that point. I went, and I watched a couple of minutes and went, I'm not really that interested. So I go back to the game, and then it's like, oh, Nick Taylor suddenly tied for the lead. And he chipped in for eagle, and then I was hooked. I was on it. And so, but for a while there, when I first came over to it, it's like, oh, golfers hitting golf balls in Hawaii and left lovely green grass. But I was just kind of like, well, I'm just not invested. It was like that feeling we've used a few times ago. I went, you know, kind of the sense of ennui around regular golf.
Well, I finished the Bills Denver game, where the Bills, you know, dominated thanks to the great Josh Allen. And then I switched over right away to the golf because I thought, okay, you know, it's like 4:30 at the, I think the game was a 1 o'clock game.
Yeah.
So it was over around 4:30, whenever that was. I switched right to the Sony Open, and I'm like, now they're only on the second, third hole. And I'm like, you know, normally, again, I would have hung in there. You know, I would have been like, okay, now I got golf to watch. But I didn't. Yeah. I left, took the dog for a walk, did a bunch of stuff around the house. And then sometime later, did the same thing. I actually turned it on, and just after he chipped in for eagle, and I'm the same as you, I'm like, well, here we go then. And then I watched the other guys come in. They didn't, neither of them got into the playoff. Then I watched the two playoff holes where Nick birdies the first one, birdies the second one, wins. I was like, this is great. This is what we love. Absolute. Golf. When it's exciting, yep. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And next,
but a lot of times it's not.
And being Canadian, yeah, if that had been another dude, I wouldn't have. If I'd have turned it on and saw that there was going to be a playoff, that would have caught my attention. Because totally. I like attention. I like playoffs.
Well, totally. It's like you know, the 5 minute. Three-player overtime in the NHL. It's yeah. Fun stuff to watch. But just briefly, if you will, I think Dan Hicks said it. He called Nick Taylor Mr. Clutch. Like, really? That's three playoffs, and he's won every one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, so good for him. He didn't finish the season well last year. He didn't get picked for the President's Cup team, which I think was a mistake, Mr. Weir. Regardless.
Well, I would have picked him over that other guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy. You know, there's, of course. I know like, there was everyone Corey, knows, of course, who he is.
Corey Connors and then the other dude, other Canadian dude.
Pendrith?
Pendrith. I would have picked Nick Taylor over Pendrith.
Well, I would have left one of those other international. I would have packed the team with Canadians so the Canadian fans could go ape shit and do all that nationalistic stuff like singing songs.
Well, this is a great tie into the last thing I want to talk about, which is this orange turd stain that is about to become the president of the United States again, the orange beast, the literally worst person on the planet right now, currently, and that's saying something. But all his many, many faults aside, the fact that he cheats at golf.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great book by the sports writer Rick Riley, who I loved. I've read the book, and it's fantastic, called The Commander and Cheat. And as we golfers know, there's nothing that golfers find more disgusting and will ruin your life in the world of golf than being caught cheating. So Trump, who wants to turn Canada into the 51st state and all this other nonsense.
I know.
To be honest with you, a little disappointed with Wayne Gretzky. Like, shut up.
Really?
Shut up, you dunderhead. And calling our prime minister, now ex-prime minister, calling him a governor. It's all just so disgusting. But the other thing that is as disgusting, to me at least, is Trump posts a couple days ago that he's won his senior club championship with a score of 68. Now, we all saw the Bryson DeChambeau bit where, you know, Trump turned out to be better than a lot of us would have thought. He walks around saying he's a 2.5 handicap. He's not. He might be a 10, but still, you know, give the guy his due. You could see him breaking 80 the occasional time on a pretty easy golf course or from the front tees.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I wrote. I don't know much, but I 1,000% know this could not be, that percent, 1,000% no, he could not legitimately shoot 68, full stop.
Yeah.
There's no way. Listen, I'm not certain about a lot of things in life. You know, I have a new girlfriend, so that's all up in the, who knows what they're thinking half the time. I have no idea.
It's a mystery.
Why are you quiet? Why are you loud? I have no idea. But I do know this. Like, he may have posted 68, but under the rules of golf the rest of us are playing, for the most part, he's not shooting 68. The fact that they post it and the people around him all know he cheated. Anyway, one of the writers for Golf Digest gave me a big thumbs up about that. One of the senior writers. He liked that post. I mean, I think he would have liked to have said that because, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I mean, oh, God. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's not only unbelievable what Trump says about 51st state and everything. It's like, oh, what's that say to China about Taiwan? What does that say to Putin about Ukraine?
Yeah.
So anyways, we could go, but I won't go any further than that. But just sigh, moan.
Yeah, he beat his age. He beat his age by 10 shots.
Yeah, it's...
I've got to be honest with you. The people around him, including Jack Nicklaus, who last fall gave Trump at one of his courses, I can't remember if it was Bedminster or the whatever course he owns. Nicklaus was at a ceremony awarding that club championship trophy to Trump. And I was like, come on, Jack.
Don't, really?
Really? You know he can't shoot these numbers. Anyway. Well,
I'm glad you expressed that and got that off your chest. Do you feel better now for having disgorged that toxin from your from your gut?
I've been scourging some toxins for the last 24 to 48 hours, trust me. I feel better for having spoken to you. That's what I like to tell people. Tim O'Connor, that's his secret sauce. That's his secret powers. He's just a good guy to talk to. If you want to get a hold of Tim O'Connor, O'ConnorGolf.ca, you can hook up some lessons, and you're doing a little introductory thing. You're doing some freebies.
Yeah, yeah. Every once in a while, I'll throw it out there that I'm doing some free 30-minute coaching sessions. So it just gives people a chance to have an experience what coaching could be like. And I'm calling it my Getting Unstuck, Developing Your Feeling of Greatness. You think I'd remember it? So it's just, you know, what's going on with your game? What do you think keeps you stuck? And then we can take a look at some things that might get you unstuck and moving forward. So I do it a couple times a year, offer these free 30-minute coaching sessions. So if you want to take advantage of that, send me a note to tim@oconnorgolf.ca and we'll get that set up.
Be definitely well worth your time. I've had a chance to hit golf balls with Tim O'Connor. I consider it a wonderful experience. I was actually thinking maybe Ollie will, probably not before I go away, because you're going away, but maybe when I come back in February, we should have a rare, you know, meeting in person and go hit some balls over there at the golf house.
Yeah, or find some place in the middle and maybe get our buddy Kent in there and another STD and... Maybe have a game or something. That'd be fun.
Yeah, you know, I guess. I mean, playing, I still can't. Like, Kent wants to play an actual game of simulator golf, and I just don't connect with it. I like...
Well, yeah.
I really don't. I mean, some guys really love it.
But the putting... Well, I think what they really love is getting out of the house, drinking some beer, and they hit golf balls in the winter, and it's kind of like golf, but the chipping and putting part... just seems just like just not golf. It's just
well, one way or another, I'm going to see you before the snow melts, and you know, we'll have a look at each other's swings.
We'll do that. Well, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll give you a look. You look at mine. It'll be super fun. Humble and Fred Show. Of course, you can get it where you get your podcasts, along with all the other podcasts in the Humble and Fred family. We wish you all the best of this newish year. I mean, it is the 15th of January at some point. I guess you have to stop wishing people Happy New Year, but why not? Like, why not just keep it up all the way through the year? Maybe that'll be our thing on every show. Happy New Year, Swing Thoughts.
Did they deal with that in a Seinfeld episode?
I don't know. Probably. For Tim O'Connor, I'm Golf Spiritual Leader, and we'll see you next time. A band is blowing down.
Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring.